welcome to another episode of My Interest This Week podcast. My name is Jason Anderson, and I'm recording this for the week ended October 10th, 2020. In this episode, I'll be talking a little bit about backup solutions, or just what has interested me about backup solutions over the past week, and also about the Internet of Things. So, without further ado, let's go into the... How about the backup thing? What I normally do with that is I back up something every day. So I'll just take an incremental backup, or I'll do a full backup, depending upon what I usually use as Time Shift. It came with Linux Mint. This is a fine little piece of software that I have. It's great for if, say, if you've updated the system and something got borked, you can just roll it back. You can roll the whole darn thing back, in fact. Back to a previous version, you know, the last backup, for instance. I've used it once or twice, I think, just to retrieve old files. So, for instance, say I've accidentally written over an old document, then I can just go back to that. It's pretty easy, in fact. It came really in handy about, I think it was 3 weeks to a month ago. What had happened was that one of my SSDs went out. I may have talked about this in a previous episode. And I had to resort to my backups. Now, luckily, I already had an SSD that I had bought near the beginning of the year. So all I did was that I just switched to that SSD, put the computer into, let's see here, what did I use? I used the SSD, then I booted to a live, I think it was a live session of Linux Mint, installed that, and then I restored my backups. About three hours later, my system was brand new, or more of, it was almost as good as new. I mean, the booting was a little bit longer, but whatever. That's also a very important thing to have restores. I think there's an old saying in sysadmins in that work. Backups are nothing, restores are everything. And believe me, that has to be, you have to check your restores. If you do regular backups, be it with, what's that called? I'm trying to remember what that solution on Windows is called. I mean, that has system restore, but it has something else with it. Bitwarden? Well, whatever. So anyway, you need to check your backups every now and then. It would really suck if you were doing backups for about, I don't know, a year or two, then you really have to restore them only to find that the backups were corrupted or you weren't in fact saving anything at all. God, I've heard about, I think I've heard one or two stories where someone was diligently backing up copies of the system. I think they had tapes or it was floppy disks or something like that. What they would do is this was probably about 20 years ago or something. They would carefully back up the system, put it into a little folder of some kind or a binder of some kind, put it on the shelf, and they were very neat and meticulous about it. Of course, when it came time to actually restore the system, they found out that they weren't restoring anything at all. Yeah, so always check your backups, ensure that they can be restored. And there are many different backup and restore solutions. I mean, heck, I wouldn't be surprised if, say, Google or Amazon would love to sell you one of those. I currently use I use Time Shift. That does a great job. I've recently learned about something called Restic. That one's pretty nice. One of the things it does is that it not only does a backup of your system, but it also does it's completely encrypted. So, for instance, if you want to completely back up your system using Restic, you can do that, and then you can store it in the cloud. One of the benefits of that is that no one can snoop on your data. What's even cooler is that when you do incremental backups, it does them fairly quick. I think it does deduplication. Oh my goodness, you can go down the rabbit hole with regards to... with respect to backups. Heck, there is things such as ButterFS and ZFS. And by the way, yes, I will call it ZFS. Anyway, with ButterFS and ZFS, what you can do is you can do snapshots of the entire file system down to the block level. What's even better about ZFS is that it will do... I'm trying to remember what it was called. There is something called copy on write. But what it will mainly do is it will verify that it actually copied the blocks of data when you back them up. Yeah, that is really great if you're... for your database and for your just your entire system, you know, your entire server, what have you, depending upon what you have. I mean, heck, ZFS has been used in professional situations in companies for years, so yeah, it's really great. If you, in fact, pair that up with a, let's see here, what is that called? I think it's called PFSense? With a NAS of some kind, it's an amazing piece of software. Well, if you want to jump through the hoops, because ZFS usually, but not always, usually it requires a lot of RAM just to make it work. But I digress. Unfortunately, I can't do a really good backup. Can't really do a really good backup solution. There's something called, I think it's called a 1-2-3 backup. What you do is you do two local backups and one remote backup. That way, if the local ones are corrupted, you can restore the remote one. I've also heard of something called the grandfather-father-son backup. What that does is you would do one full backup and save that remotely. That's the grandfather. And then each week on a certain day, Sunday, for instance, you do a full backup, that's the father. And then every day you would do a differential or incremental backup, that's the son. That's a nice situation to have because if something goes wrong, you know, you can revert to either the previous day or you can just restore from... you know, the full backup, the father one. Or if you lose all of... if you lose the backups, you can still... you still have that old one, the grandfather one. Doing something like that can be a little difficult because not everybody can do full remote backups. I mean, heck, even if you stored... yeah, as I said earlier, even if you had something... if you used something such as Google or AWS, well, you may have several gigs of data, and after a certain number, I forget which, they start to charge you. Now, what you can do, let's see here, I think with AWS, they will charge you once, but if you do just, I think it's incremental backup, well, anyway... if you just do small backups each day, then they won't charge you as much. So now I go from backups to the Internet of Things. I'm sure you've heard about what the Internet of Things, I'm sure you've seen, you know, the Alexa, those little pucks, and maybe the light bulbs that can do Wi-Fi, and also maybe you even have a power meter on your house that phones home back to the power company. The Internet of Things is here. Basically, if some little device has a CPU in it and it can call out to the internet, then it's an Internet of Things. The Internet of Things is a mixed bag. I mean, on the one hand, you can do so much with these darn things. You can monitor stuff. You can do remote whatever with them. They're really small. Usually they don't take up a lot of power. They don't take up a lot of space. It's pretty amazing. It's changing the landscape of industries. I said earlier with, you know, power,
the power company, or they have their meters, they collect a lot of information, and they can phone home, and you can adjust them quickly, or maybe it's just something simple with say light bulbs, or maybe you have one of those, what are they called, the name escapes me, the thermostats that you can also phone home, or more of if you're outside of your house, you can send them a little, you can say, hey, you know, when I get home at this time, raise the temperature or do something like that. It's pretty nice that these little things can do, but there's also a bit of a downside to them. So, for instance, I mentioned earlier about those, about the thermostats and also the power meters. Well, the thing is that they always collect your data. So the power company is continuously collecting your data on this stuff, on your power consumption, and also the Nest, I think they're called Nest? Anyway, they're constantly collecting your data and sending it back to someone else. So, for instance, the Nest ones, if I recall, those are owned by Google. And so, as a consequence, they're constantly collecting your data on that. So who knows what kind of data they collect on you. Sometimes these devices, such as the power meters, they may be collecting a lot more data than you think. I mean, who knows what kind of... let me back up. For those power meters, they're probably not collecting much on you. They may not be able to sense a lot of data on you. But there are other devices which can. So, for instance, those Alexas from Amazon. Oh, boy. Look, those are great for if you need to ask it something, if you need it to play music, or you need it to order something, but it's always listening. Maybe you heard, I think it was last year. Maybe it was in 2018. Anyway, Amazon was in really hot water because of the data that the Alexa devices collected. It was always listening for, I think, a certain wake word. For instance, Okay, Alexa, or something like that. Anyway, it would also record a bunch of other audio, and in some parts of the world, that's a big no-no. So, for instance, it was recording, I think, the conversations of children, which in Europe, if I recall, at least under GDPR, that's very bad. And so they had a bit of a scuffle with the European Union over that one. But this is just the tip of the iceberg for these Internet of Things devices. Who knows what information they're gathering on you? They could be constantly listening to what you say. They could be getting information on where you are driving. Well, if it's in your car, it could be constantly monitoring... if it's, say, your wristwatch, it may be constantly monitoring your vitals. And that information could be going to, who knows? I mean, it could be going to Google, to Microsoft, to Amazon, to Apple, and who knows what they're doing with it. They may tell us, oh, we're just using it to improve our products and to improve blah, 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 but... Companies such as Facebook and Amazon didn't become billion-dollar companies for nothing. Your data has a lot of value to it, and they're using it. They may be selling it to whoever. They may be just selling it to some, heck, I don't know, mom-and-pop store down the store just to sell you their latest pies. There could be some company in your state or jurisdiction, in wherever you are, who could be using it to just get you to purchase their products. It could be your local government helping to figure out how to, I don't know, form traffic or to control traffic or something like that. It could be used by some foreign company to influence the voters in, your country. It could be... It can even be used possibly for finding illegal immigrants. Now, this is more, is not something with the Internet of Things, but more of with people's mobile phones. For instance, I think it's, here, I'll link to a story, I think, from the New York Times that I recently read about how people's, the apps that they use, it takes all of this location data from their mobile phones, and it is used in locating illegal immigrants. I think there was ICE found many illegal immigrants in California, for instance, by doing this. This is something that's quite alarming. And it's not just with people's private data. Companies use IoT devices for monitoring their offices, for setting up possibly ad hoc networks, things like that. And what's, companies depend upon these for years, and these devices are not really checked. I mean, I'm sure the companies do try to secure them, to take stock of them in inventory and ensure that they that they're accounted for, but they don't really secure them. So, for instance, what some companies may do is that they'll just put up an IP camera, or more of a camera that may be on a closed circuit or a wireless network or something like that, and they don't change the password on it, the login credentials. So what you'll sometimes find is that bots or some hackers, they will come across these devices, these cameras, for instance, and they will hack into them. They'll do a dictionary, what is it called? I think a dictionary attack against the device so as to try and gain control of it. Heck, I remember, let's see here, I think this was about 2 or 3 years ago, Brian Krebs, his site was taken offline by a DDoS attack that was from a bunch of compromised IoT devices. They had done something, what is known as a magnified attack, I think. But I won't get into the details of that. So you have all of these IoT devices that companies have been using for years, and they're insecure. Or at least over the past, maybe more recently, over the past few years, they've started getting secure ones. You know, these, some of these IoT devices have gotten updates, which is great, but there's still hundreds, if not millions of them out there that are unsecure, and who knows what they could do. I mean, they may even be in certain specific places. So, for instance, in a factory of some kind, if they're used to monitor the safety of the workers in the factory, for instance, if those fail, we could have dire consequences. There are also at power plants. I'm sure some of you may have heard of the Stuxnet worm. I mean, that got into a power plant in, I think it was Iran, a long time ago. Now, mind you, they didn't have, that wasn't utilizing IoT devices, but still, we need to really rethink how we utilize these IoT devices and how we can secure them. I mean, one way of securing them would be to, say, put them on their own specific network. That would at least help to focus them and minimize the risk that these devices pose to us. But still, we need to ensure that they're better secured. So, for instance, if that device can be updated, by God, we need to get it updated. If we can, you know, isolate it, get it patched. I've heard of some operating systems that utilize containerization. That can help ensure that even if, say, that little component in the IoT device is compromised, well, at least the whole thing won't be compromised. There's also, we have to sometimes test these. So, for instance, if a team does a penetration test on, say, a factory, an office, some campus somewhere, and if one of the weaknesses is in these IoT, in these Internet of Things devices, well, now we have to rethink that. Sorry if this is a lot of doom and gloom, by the way. I mean, we can't... It's not to say that all of these IoT devices are bad. I mean, for instance, last week I was talking with a coworker of mine. Her name's Jamie, and she's assisting her elderly parents in transitioning to a new home. You see, she's building a new house, and she's moving her parents in with her. And one of the things she told me that she may be using is an Alexa device to help them. Because if, you know, she's not around, or if her husband's not around, or whoever, and if one of her parents is in grave danger, if the both of them are in grave danger, they can just use that to call for help. So that's really great. I mean, that's in an emergency, those devices, such an Alexa, can help. But we need to get the benefits out of these IoT devices, but we can't ignore some of the problems we may have with them. We have to realize that you can't just set it and forget it. Kind of makes me think of this old anyway, moving forward, we have to ensure that these devices work for us and aren't a huge risk. And I hope that the companies that are manufacturing them will realize this and build in better security to them. So anyway, it looks like I've been rambling for a while, and I think I should just end this video. If you want to get in contact with me, you can, for one, catch me on Twitter at FakeJasonA. On Mastodon, you can find me at Ertain at mass.linuxgamecast.com. Also, if you just want to look at my blog, it's jasonsblog.place. And remember, you can't get to the top of the mountain if you don't aim for the stars.